This is Scott Becker, and thank you for joining us today. We're on the Becker's Healthcare Women's Leadership Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a senior executive in pharmacy at RWJ Barnabas, Indu Liu. Indu, can you take a moment to introduce yourself, and then we'll talk through a number of questions.
Sure. Thanks, Scott. Thanks so much. My name is Indu Liu. I'm the Vice President of Corporate Pharmacy Clinical Pharmacy Services for RWJ Barnabas Health in New Jersey.
Fantastic. And tell us, sort of as the Vice President of Corporate Pharmacy, what does somebody do in that role, and how did you get into that role?
Sure. So I'm responsible for providing the strategic clinical leadership for the pharmacy enterprise. So this includes designing, managing, and improving the medication use system. So we're ensuring quality outcomes through performance improvement activities, and also fulfilling the organization's research and educational missions. So the pharmacy enterprise comprises of about 23 divisions. It ranges from the acute care service lines, which are our hospitals, and the integrated service line, which includes the ambulatory care division, specialty pharmacy, retail pharmacy, home infusion, 340B, and the pharmacy reimbursement division. So how did I get into this role? Well, I've always enjoyed working with patients in the acute care setting, and I've had different roles in with different disciplines and positions. I've worked as a clinical pharmacist in the emergency room. I've worked in the pharmaceutical industry. I've worked as a pharmacy clinical coordinator and in a teaching hospital. And in one of my positions, I was working as a clinical pharmacist on the cardiology unit. And interestingly enough, I received two job offers at the same exact time for our health system. The first was to work as a clinical pharmacist in a cardiology clinic under the supervision of a world-renowned cardiologist that I highly respected. And this clinic was in the hospital. So it was at a time where pharmacists were just venturing into the clinical space of working hand-in-hand with a physician. And this was a full-time position. Literally the same week, it was the same exact time, I was offered a position under the title of fellow, and fellow implies that you're still in a learning phase, to work in corporate pharmacy. The only issue was that this position was for a period of 18 months, and it was a grant-funded position. So at the end of 18 months, I wouldn't have a job. So I had to make a choice. Do I work in an environment that I was familiar with and would have a full-time job, but could only affect the patients in one institution, or do I work in an environment for 18 months where I could impact patients in the entire healthcare system? So, but I wouldn't have a job at the end of 18 months. Well, I viewed this 18-month period as an 18-month interview, and I took the corporate job. It was then at the end of 18 months that I was promoted to director, and then in 2006, promoted to vice president of clinical pharmacy services. And that experience really taught me it's okay to take a risk if you believe in yourself.
So that's fascinating advice. I really want to talk about this willingness to take a risk, because so many people are scared to try something because they're concerned where they're going to be at the end of it. I want to really focus on two types of questions, and one of them will be up that alley, which is best advice for women leaders and really leaders in general. The other one will be about trends in pharmacy. Why don't we start with trends in pharmacy and then women's leadership? What are sort of the two or three biggest trends in what you do? You mentioned a number of areas. I know spend in these areas is rising or growing dramatically for a bunch of reasons. Talk to us about some of the trends you see in sort of the pharmacy, corporate pharmacy world at a big health system.
Sure. So one of the trends, so we'll talk about trend number one, is really focusing on opioid stewardship, right? We know that there's a problem nationally with the opioid crisis. So we're focusing on opioid stewardship, which is really described as a coordinated intervention designed by members of the healthcare team, because we want to improve, monitor, and evaluate the use of opioids in order to support and protect our patients. But I want to specifically talk about it from the medication angle. So we were looking at tackling the opioid crisis in two ways. The first one, we wanted to develop criteria for use for those patients that needed opioids, and then develop a multimodal non-opioid treatment plan. And we worked with our physician leadership. And when we're working in pharmacy, there has to be an outcome. There has to be a baseline measurement. You do an intervention and then a post-intervention measurement to see how well you're succeeding. So the first outcome we were looking at was decreasing the number of opioid prescriptions that were written from our emergency room departments, as well as decreasing the number of opioid prescriptions written for those patients that were discharged from the hospital. So in a 12-month rolling period, taking into account all of the interventions and the efforts of the healthcare team, we saw a decrease in the percentage of emergency room opioid prescriptions by 53%. And we looked at the hospital discharged opioid prescriptions, and we saw a decrease in the percentage of those prescriptions by 37%. Now, when we talk about percentages, we really need to translate that into terms of people, because at the end of the day, what are we looking to do? We're looking to ensure that our patients are protected. So what those percentages mean, in the emergency room department, 25,380 people did not get an opioid prescription compared to the year before. And from the hospital discharge perspective, 21,116 people did not get a prescription for an opioid compared to the year before. So I think opioid stewardship is a huge focus within a health system. The second trend that we're focusing on is really, it's a global health system strategy, and that's moving from a fee-for-service environment, which is based on volume, to a value-based care model. So fee-for-service is healthcare's most traditional payment model, where healthcare providers are reimbursed based on the number of services they're providing or the number of procedures they order. Value-based healthcare, however, is a healthcare delivery model in which the providers, that includes hospitals and physicians, they're paid based on patient health outcomes. So under these value-based care agreements, providers are rewarded for helping patients improve their health, reduce the effects and incidence of chronic disease, and essentially live healthier lives through an evidence-based way. We have better outcomes for our patients, and then subsequently we see a decrease in healthcare utilization dollars for not only the providers, but for the patients as well. And the third trend, and this relates to the pharmacy enterprise, and I am so excited about this one, is redeploying the pharmacist from the acute care setting within a health system, so that's within the four walls of the hospital, into the ambulatory care space, right? So typically pharmacists within a health system, they operate within the walls of the hospital. But we should be in the business of preventative and wellness care, not only sickness care, because patients don't spend the majority of their time in the hospital. They spend their majority of time outside of the hospital. So we're really looking at ambulatory care practice pharmacy. And what is that? It's when the pharmacists are involved in the provision of integrated, accessible healthcare services. These pharmacists are accountable for addressing the medication needs of the patients. They develop those sustained partnerships with the patients, and they really practice within the context of family and the community. And they do this a variety of ways. They have direct patient care and medication management for the ambulatory care patients. They have great coordination of care with the other healthcare practitioners. They truly are a patient advocate, focusing on wealth and health and promotion. They are also responsible for educating the patient, because pharmacists are the medication management experts. We are trained, it is in our DNA to achieve the best medication treatment outcomes. We counsel patients about prescription meds, over-the-counter medications. We manage chronic conditions such as diabetes, asthma, hypertension or high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and we ensure that we're evaluating this entire medication use process, patterns, outcome, and adherence. Because truly for patients, when they are non-adherent to their medications, most likely they will be visiting the emergency room, they'll have hospitalizations or rehospitalizations. So by moving the pharmacist into the ambulatory care arena, we have benefits to the clinic and we have benefits to our patient. So in the physician's offices, we might see decreased visits for chronic diseases. There's delegation of this medication management to the pharmacist, and thereby we increase the bandwidth for the physicians. It's this collaborative effort, and what you could potentially see is an improved ability to achieve those value-based quality metrics that we talked about before. For our patients, it's wonderful. They have increased access to health care. They have decreased drug-related problems. They are achieving their medication management goals. So your diabetic patients, their sugar levels or their hemoglobin A1Cs, which is the laboratory value that is looked at to see how well diabetic patients are maintained, they're within goal. Their blood pressure is within goal. Their cholesterol is within goal. These patients aren't being admitted to the hospital because of an exacerbation of their asthma. And the patients also see decreased costs. So currently, we have three ambulatory care pharmacists in the physician's office practice. So they're covering and collaborating with the physicians, and which essentially what that translates to is we are covering 34 doctor practices. So very, very excited about the redeployment of pharmacists from the acute care environment to the ambulatory care environment.
So really, at least three or four big trends we've talked about, and then I'd like to ask about a different one as well. You've talked about sort of the efforts to reduce the use of opioids at every level and how you actually count numbers of patients that have not used an opioid or been administered an opioid. You talked about the fundamental transformation from looking at things from a value-based or volume-based to value-based kind of care. And finally, you've really talked about deploying pharmacists outside of the hospital into the ambulatory settings and the clinic settings to get closer and closer to the patient and make sure you're getting better and better adherence with patients. But I love that. Talk to me also about pharmacy spend. Is pharmacy spend moving in the right direction, the wrong direction? Is there any better controls of it? Any thoughts on that?
Well, when we're looking at pharmacy spend, right, so it's really the new innovative therapies that are coming onto the market that can potentially dictate what our spends are. So a huge area that we're looking at, because there's been new scientific advances, is in the area of oncology, right? There are some medications that we know that could potentially cure cancer. And those kind of cutting-edge therapies and modalities really do impact what our pharmacy spend is. So you look at pharmacy spend in two buckets. You look at it from the inpatient perspective, which is the acute care hospitals. Then you might look at it from the outpatient perspective, which really the oncology services flow into. So really what you're looking at is, can we control the inpatient side? And really what can we do to maximize those treatment modalities for the patients in the oncology setting? And those are the two biggest drivers when we're looking at managing our pharmacy budget.
Let me ask you a question about this, about the new cancer cares. There's been this tremendous evolution, sort of, it seems like more in the last 35 years than there were in the last 30 years combined, in terms of immunotherapies, vaccines, and so forth to help fight cancers. I mean, truly remarkable advancements in the last few years, almost under the title of really precision medicine and attacking cancer at the gene level. Why is it that the same treatment here might cost $600,000 and it still is just the evolution and unaffordable? The same exact treatment or something very similar in Germany might cost $40,000. How is it that we're at that spot? Any quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's really difficult to really focus on the costs from the European market versus the costs from what we're having to deal with on the U.S. market. But what I can say is that these types of therapies truly are changing the lives of patients, and we need to be focusing on precision medicine and immunotherapy.
Thank you. It clearly seems like there's just been crazy progress in it, remarkable in the last couple of years, just amazing. And a lot of lauding to scientists, researchers, and everybody that works with them to get there with the tremendous progress that seems to be being made. another set of questions. Your best advice for women leaders, any particular thoughts in terms of best advice for women leaders?
Yeah, so really it's aligning your passion with a focused purpose on the foundation of a plan. And what that entails is that you have to believe in yourself. If you don't believe in yourself, nobody else will believe in you. So you have to believe in yourself and have the confidence to raise your hand and take those stretch assignments. You must do that. And when you do that, you also have to not be afraid to fail forward. We're all going to make mistakes. As long as we learn from those mistakes and we improve the process, you can fail forward and execute on the plan. You really, really need to believe in yourself. The second thing is you need to surround yourself with a great team. The team is everything. You need to surround yourself with this great team, and then really the basis for everything is creating an environment of trust. I think the trust is the basis for a great leader. When you create an environment of trust, people will come to you with ideas. People will come to you when they see something that maybe is broken or maybe there might be a unique solution. They will not be afraid when you have that environment of trust. And when you have that environment of trust, it creates and fosters creativity and ingenuity and really thinking outside of what the norm is. So I think for women, believing in yourself, raising your hand for those stretch assignments, and surrounding yourself with a team and creating an environment of trust are great things for women leaders.
That's fantastic. And also one of the things you mentioned was not being afraid to fail, that it's okay to not be perfect. Nobody's perfect, and to live with, we believe in the concept of perfectly imperfect, and it's okay, and you learn from it and improve the process and keep going. So love that. And let me ask you a different question, two more questions. How do you keep yourself motivated day in, day out, year in, year out?
Well, the tagline that we created within the pharmacy enterprise is actively seeking excellence. So you can never be satisfied with the status quo or minimum standards. You have to be looking at what's next on the horizon. And how do you actively seek excellence? If you surround yourself with a great team, they will push you to go further. They will have different perspectives, different ideas and points of view. They will be excited and motivated. And for me, that gets me excited and motivated. When the people around me have that energy and passion, it's infectious, and you can't help but get motivated yourself. But it's really on the platform of never being satisfied, never taking your foot off the gas. You are continuously learning and looking how you can get better, so you're actively seeking that excellence.
Thank you. And we love that tagline of actively seeking excellence, proactively seeking excellence. We love that. Any specific mentors or mentees that have been very important to your own development and growth?
Well, I've been very fortunate to have wonderful mentors throughout my life, but probably my biggest mentor was my dad. He was in charge of all of the laboratory departments for a hospital, and at the time when I was moving from a clinical pharmacist position to a clinical coordinator position, I knew that there would be about 30 or 40 people in the department that I was responsible for. And I was early on in my career. And I went to my dad and I said, how am I going to get 40 people to move in the direction, you know, that we think is the right direction? I'm young as a practicing pharmacist. I'm new to this organization. I'm the new kid on the block. How do I do this? And I was nervous. And he said to me, well, couple things. You're approaching this as a manager, not a leader. And when you approach something as a manager, people do things because they have to. It's like required reading, right? They do it because they're told, because of position or whatever that may be. He said, if you can inspire them and lead them, they will do things because they want to, not because they have to. So he said, you need to approach this job as a leader, not a manager. First bit of advice. The second bit of advice that he did, which I still do to this day, he said, when you go to your job, don't go right into your room and close the door and boot up your computer and check email. He said, what I want you to do is I want you to walk around the entire department. I want you to smile. I want you to say good morning. And I want you to engage in conversations with the people on your team. I want you to care about them. I want you to learn about their family. I want you to learn what excites them, what motivates them. And the only way you can do that is if you go around and you walk every day and you say good morning and you have that conversation. So you need to have the leadership, but you also have to have the kindness. And those were the two best pieces of advice that I have received. And to this day, I will walk around the halls and I'll say good morning. And, you know, you ask about a person's family or their kids or their pet or their what they did on vacation. That's important because that shows that you're human and that you care about them. So mentor, that was my mentor. As far as my mentee, we've been very fortunate within the pharmacy enterprise that we have pharmacy students. We have people just out of the pharmacy residency that we work with all the time. And I can't say that I've had one best mentee. The best mentees, and they change every month, every cycle of rotations, are the ones that I learn from. They teach me. They expose me to different perspectives, and I'll give you a great example. So I was very excited about the marketing material we had that was printed on nice, thick, glossy paper. The paper was really hard. You could feel it. And I was so excited about our brochures that we had printed for recruitment for the residency programs. Well, one of our mentees said to me, Indu, I'd like to approach you because I have an idea about using social media for marketing. I said, okay, didn't have an Instagram account or a Facebook account or any of those things. So she brought up this great marketing plan utilizing social media as opposed to the brochures because she said, Indu, quite frankly, we throw those out when you're not looking. And then what we found was that we increased our prospective residency candidates that were new interest by 79%. 79%. That's a huge number. Not only did we increase the breadth and the scope regionally, we were attracting people from all over the country, even as far as Hawaii. So that's the mentees are the ones, the best ones that I learn from. They teach me. They're so passionate. They feel they can change the world, and that's what gets me excited.
Well, that's fantastic. And we love both those answers, really. The discussion of being a leader, not just a manager, of caring about people, not just closing the door, but walking the halls, getting to know people and showing that you care deeply in every way. And we love the idea. I feel the same way about when I talk to anybody, the people I love talking to are the people that I actually learn from, that I'm just not talking, but I'm learning. And so I appreciate your answers very much there on the mentee side as well. Indu, it's a pleasure to speak with you. You've built a magnificent career. We're so thrilled to have you on today to talk both about the business of pharmacy and the trends you see there, as well as advice for women leaders. Just a great pleasure visiting with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Scott. I really enjoyed it.